Welcome to the BrownsCast podcast.
Snap is back. Ball is down. The kick is blocked. They got it. Denzel Ward blocked the field goal try. Takes the ball. Gives the ball. A cutback by Chubb. He's to the 10. He's still running to the 5. He dips outside left. He's going in. Touchdown. What a run. Nick Chubb.
Thanks for tuning into another episode of the BrownsCast. Today we are joined by the biggest Pro Bowl snub of all time and the most dominant offensive lineman in the NFL, Wyatt Teller. Wyatt, man, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. I appreciate that introduction.
Yeah, it had to be said. So talking about that really quick. So when they released those Pro Bowl rosters at the end of December, I looked for your name upwards of 10 times on there, and I still refuse to believe that the highest graded offensive lineman in the league did not make the Pro Bowl. How is that even possible?
I think that a lot of it is fan led. So while we have a great, fan base in Cleveland that, was pushing for me and stuff and, voting all the time, it truly is at a national level. And, Joel deserved his Pro Bowl. I think that, even some of the other guys who made it definitely deserved it. So I don't feel as, disrespected, but it's definitely something I'm striving for. And, I'd love to be able to, I got Pro Bowl, which was honestly, harder
all
to
pro.
Do. All pro, excuse okay. me, not Pro Bowl. All pro, thank you. All pro, which is honestly harder to do. So it's a blessing regardless. And, I put my name out there and, we showed some good stuff. Yeah, exactly.
And all pro is honestly better. So that's fine. And over time, as you keep becoming more and more dominant, I'm sure your name will be there and you'll be there every year. So
yes, sir.
Just had to add that.
All right, so I kind of want to start from the beginning. You got traded to Cleveland in August of the 2019 season. What were you doing at that moment when you realized that you got traded, and what was kind of going through your head?
Yeah, so it's actually kind of a funny story. We were getting ready for a game. I had played 3 games with Buffalo in the preseason, and then, I was getting ready for that 4th game, and I was in the hot tub. I was talking about game plan with one of the guys. I was actually going to be starting at right tackle, believe it or not, for that game. Because I was a backup, they didn't know where to put me. They were just trying to, if they were going to, keep me in Cleveland or, in Buffalo, they were going to try to have me as a utility player. So I was sitting in the hot tub. I was getting ready for, whatever. And, the guy, one of the guys who comes up who, gets the players to go talk to, the head coach and GM. Hey, Wyatt, come on, buddy. We got to go upstairs. And I was like, oh, why do we got to go upstairs? I mean, usually when he comes, we call him the Reaper. It's a joke. But most of the time, like, if you're talking to the Reaper, it means he's coming to get you. It's not a good thing. So he came up to me and talked to me. And I was like, oh, gosh. So I head up there. I go talk to him. They're very respectful. I think Coach McDermott is a class act, and was a great part of my career, but a short part. So I got traded. I remember driving. I had the week. I had like 2 or 3 days. Camp ended the next day, so I had 2 or 3 days to relax. Carly, who and I just started dating, she came up, and one of my buddies here, Eric Cush, he gave me a 20-foot trailer, and I put it on the back of my truck and drove it.
It literally all happened overnight.
It happened in 48 hours. I was totally moved from Buffalo to Cleveland. Small things that, mailing and stuff that my friend could send me who was living there. But really, it was amazing. And Carly's a testament to that. She was a huge part of moving me in and out and, getting me a spot in Cleveland that is, honestly under the radar, but a great quiet area in Olmsted Falls. So it's a nice little spot. So she's a big help to the transition from Buffalo to Cleveland.
That's awesome. So right when you realized you were going to Cleveland, what went through your head?
I mean, at that moment, you guys had just gotten, some big pickups, everything. I mean, if you think about it, right before 2019, the hype was there. So I fully believe that the talent was there for a playoff team. I didn't know how it was ran or anything like that. So when I got here, it was learning a new playbook. It was a whole different aspect. I mean, you guys probably understand this playbook is, if it was in paper form, luckily it's digital and it's only 1 terabyte, but if it was, if it was in paper form, it would be, a good 1,000 pages or something. I mean, it's crazy how many code words, how many drawings, how many, different fronts and stuff that we go over on a daily basis. So it truly was, a real moment where I realized that I had to, you know, take a step forward and, you know, whatever. And it was tough, right? Like, I don't think I was playing as well as I could have been, in 2019, but luckily I had a full off season to get strong, to learn the technique, to learn the plays. I mean, trust me, 85% of football is mental. You know, it truly is knowing where to go and who to hit and, you know, being able to pass one up, but knowing who to pass up and who not to pass up. I mean, it's a lot of play and experience that comes into it.
Yeah, and I mean, I couldn't really imagine. But we are glad that you kind of got it down. So moving past the 2019 season, Kevin Stefanski gets hired. What were your initial reactions?
Yeah, so I knew some players from the Vikings, and you know, before I could even text them to, you know, throw a grabber out to see a feeler to see, you know, what he was like or anything like that, they were texting me, right? You know, one of my buddies, he plays tackle for them, Brian. He was a guy who came up and was like, dude, you're gonna love Coach Stefanski. He's the best, man. He respects you. He is who he is. He doesn't tell you a lie. And, you know, through a year of being with him, I mean, it's a true statement. You know, that's what makes, you know, Coach Stefanski such a good coach and such a good guy, is that he's true. He tells you what he's going to do. If, you know, for example, this year with all the, civil riots and stuff like that, and all the stuff that needed to be done, all the riots and stuff, and social justice, he hugely moved forward and was like, look, like I am outspoken and outgunned here. I want your teammates to talk. And I remember there were just days of Stump Mitchell, who is from Georgia, who has seen some crazy stuff in his life, you know, talk to us about his walk and his career and everything like that, and how he has been, you know, discriminated against or not, you know, how people have shown the good side of people. And it's amazing when you hear the good side, good stories, and Stump's the best at that. You know, he's not all negative, which is nice. But you get to hear the stories. And I remember Jarvis coming and talking. Jarvis was outspoken about it, and you know, it just meant so much. You know, Kendall Lamb, who's one of my best friends on the team, you know, he's doing big stuff. Chris Hubbard was doing a bunch of stuff. So
I feel like Stefanski just like didn't try to be something.
No, he wasn't. He literally was like, this is something that I'm going to put my money where my mouth is. I care about this. This is what I'm going to do, but you guys are going to lead our social justice. And it was powerful, man, because a lot of guys would either be like, that's not our job, right? Or someone's going to be like, all right, how can I get around this the most, you know, tiptoe way that I don't hurt anybody's feelings? And he wasn't out here trying to hurt anybody's feelings. He was out here trying to change someone's life in East Cleveland. And he did that with, you know, the $250,000 or whatever it was, a lot of money to East Cleveland for the digital divide. It just shows you what kind of class we have in the office.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like he kind of deserved Coach of the Year on the field and off the field. That's really, really fantastic. So I do want to talk about one more hire on the staff, Bill Callahan. did you know anything about him prior, before he came to Cleveland? How was your interaction with him when he first came to Cleveland? Run that down.
Yeah, so believe it or not, I had Coach Callahan's phone number before he was drafted. I grew up a Redskins fan, so you know, I went to their pro day. Their little area. Their local pro day. Cause I went to Virginia Tech, so I was right down the road and I was home. So I, you know, went out there and I got to talk to him. And I remember he tells stories of that day. You know, I was goofy and all this different stuff, but you know, he stayed in contact with me. The day that we were about to, or that I got drafted, you know, the pick that they wanted was that pick right, I think it was three picks before me, and they actually picked one of my teammates and one of my guys who's actually with my agent, Tim Settle. So they definitely didn't miss out on that pick. He's a great defensive tackle, so I don't think they messed up. But, you know, I definitely wish that, because Coach Callahan was the coach, man. He was a great coach, and I remember talking to him, and I was like, that's a guy that, you know, yeah, he's going to be hard to get along with, but he's going to push you to new levels. And I remember – when I got drafted to Buffalo, I got Coach Castillo, who was a great coach. And then when I got traded here, I had Coach Campen, who was a great coach, who played, who understood the game and understood how players are. I mean, he was the man. And then I got Coach Callahan, who's the technician, who's a fundamental, you know, genius. He's inventing the game. I mean, stuff that he's done has truly invented offensive line play. And, you know, he's this little 5'8", whippersnapper who, you know, will get in your face and tell you how it is. And he's not afraid to, you know, cut down a guy who's three times the size because he knows, what am I going to do? I can't do anything to him. But he's a great coach, and he definitely pushes you to new levels. And like I said, he's a technician, and, you know, everybody's coming out, and, you know, it's a cool thing to be called the Mauler and all this stuff. But he even said this in the beginning of the year. He goes, "What do you want to be?" And I was like, I'm Wyatt. I maul people. And he goes, "Well, that's not good enough. You know, we want to be technicians, and being a technician with speed and power is being a mauler." And it's okay, coach, you know what I'm saying? I got you. So he's a perfectionist, but he's one of the best coaches I've ever played for. And I'm excited for next year, even if I'm not excited in the moment. I know that I'm excited for the success and work that he puts us through. So he's a good coach,
and it worked.
That's great to hear. So I really don't think I've ever heard anyone say anything bad about Bill Callahan. He's just so well respected around the league. But how much of a role did he have in your monumental improvement over just one off season last year?
Yeah, so I truly, yeah. What?
I would say not in the off season.
Yeah, no, I mean, I feel like it was, so I feel like a big part of the off season, yeah, the big part of the off season was I'm a routine guy. I love routine, you know, so really COVID, I know this is going to sound counterproductive. I wish COVID never happened, but COVID was a good thing for me because I enjoy routine. So like going home or waking up, eating, going to lift, coming home, eating, video games, whatever, eating, you know, hanging out with Carly, eating, and then going to bed. So it's like, you know, I could get into a routine where I wasn't doing a bunch of different stuff. I wasn't pulled in a bunch of different directions. And it honestly helped with my training. I was working out 5 to 6 times a day, a week, and, you know, I was getting strong. I was with one of my coaches from Virginia Tech, and if you saw him, he doesn't have a neck. Ryan Schumann, his nickname is literally heavy, or not his nickname, his Instagram is heavy shrugs. So yeah, he's an absolute monster. He's about my size. He played for Virginia Tech back in the day, and now he's coaching. But he's this big old burly dude, and he's about as good as they get with strength training. And now I'm with, you know, Evan Marcus, one of our strength staff, and conditioning coaches in Cleveland. And he's the man. He's one of the best, you know, I've seen. And it's awesome when I get Ryan and him and talking, and they're agreeing all the time. It's actually kind of funny. Evan actually coached at Virginia. So UVA. So Virginia Tech don't get along. So it's a, you know, this year I got to make fun of him, and the year before he got to make fun of me for losing to Virginia. But it's cool to have people from Virginia who, you know, pass through and know each other's names, mm-hmm. and know each other. Like, for example, Ryan Schumann's dad, John Schumann, is, you know, one of the well-respected coaches in Virginia at Fork Union Military Academy, who, you know, has coached that team for 30 years, and they're a, you know, national known team where a lot of guys go for, you know, that fifth prep year. Yeah, for that fifth year.
Yeah, that really sounds fantastic, just to kind of have those old connections.
Exactly.
But switching over, you know, kind of towards the offseason, before the 2020 season, everybody was saying that there's a hole at the right guard position. everyone was kind of uncertain how you were going to pan out. Did that motivate you at all to play better and say, I will fill this gap, and I'm going to show them that there is no hole here? I am kind of that brick wall in this, the thing that this offensive line needs.
Yeah, so I feel that, yeah, right. So there was definitely a target or a question mark at right guard. And I knew that in the spring. I wasn't blind to it. I knew that I wasn't panicking or anything like that. I knew that I had to stick to my routine. I knew that I'm a good player. I was taking the technique. I was working harder than, you know, I believe, you know, the rest of the guys were. And then when we get down to it, like you said, two guys, you know, opt out. And now we have, where we had a three-way rotation or three-way fight at right guard. Now, oh my gosh, is Wyatt our only option, and then it finds
like,
out.
Like, is he going to be okay?
Is he going to be okay? Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, I'm, you know, one of the most consistent. So I feel that, you know, it's definitely a blessing to have that success, but, you know, it's also cool to, you know, be a part of an offensive line that in a running in a backfield, right? Look at our running backs. They make it easy. I just have to push one more yard, and I know Nick's going 40. So it kind of gives you motivation to, you know, work that little bit harder, is because, you know, all you have to do is give Kareem, like I said, a foot, and he can take it a yard and take it.
So you mentioned a lot of the offensive linemen, they decided to opt out, a lot of the depth at the position. So did you ever contemplate opting out?
No, I mean, well,
we really didn't. I remember we discussed it, and you were like, no.
No, so I have a healthy respect for the virus. I'm not one of the people who are saying it's not real, but I definitely was not at high risk. So I knew that, just from my educated guess, it's not like we're all specialists on COVID, but from my educated guess, I didn't need to opt out. I knew that, yes, I'd be putting people at a disadvantage, but I knew that I could stay in Cleveland, you know, keep travel low. I think my parents came to 2 games.
Yeah, and even like towards the end when everyone was like, it was getting really bad, they didn't even come at all.
I think my parents came to a game and I didn't even get to see them. Yeah, well, it was the game that, yeah.
We can say this now, but it was when I had COVID, and somehow Wyatt, we protected him at all costs. They like put him in a hotel and
yeah, so it was strict. She was feeling a little bit sick from a, she was getting off her flight and she was feeling a little bit weird. So after the Tennessee game, so she wore her mask and I didn't. I was in my truck and we actually even held hands. We go to eat and she takes a bite of her food and says, I can't taste this. And I was like, all right, I'm getting away from you.
I went and got tested and he called the Browns and they said, yeah, get out of there.
Yeah. So it was definitely a strain on, you know, relationships with your family and stuff. I mean, you know, even during this time, everybody has had to take sacrifice. You know, it's no different for us. And it's been tough, but you know,
I never
really thought about that. I knew that, you know, I'm willing to take that risk, high risk, high reward kind of mindset. And I guess it paid out.
And yeah, it certainly paid off. Carly, we're glad you're okay now.
Thank you.
You've recovered.
I still don't have my full taste and smell, which is bizarre because it was in November, but I'm okay. Thank you.
Wow. Yeah, that's kind of unfortunate. But, you know, kind of switching gears again, you got to play next to Jack Conklin, who is also an All-Pro. How did he specifically help you this season and the other guys on that offensive line?
Yeah, so, I mean, Jack's a great tackle, and he helped me elevate my play, just like I helped him elevate his play, right? Like, I think if you put the film on, our double teams are among some of the best in the league because, you know, we are two high caliber players who, you know, are starting to get chemistry. And when that happens, the rest is history. So I think that that's a positive thing. I think that, you know, our center in JC is, you know, absolutely brilliant. One of the smartest guys. I mean, yeah, he went to Cornell, but that doesn't even speak for how smart he is. Joel Bitonio, one of the greatest guys I know. He truly is a great teammate and a great player. And then Jed, you know, Jed was starting to hit his stride. I think that, you know, being young in the NFL at left tackle, it's no joke, man. And you sink or swim in the NFL. That's just how it is. I remember I barely knew the playbook in my first year as a rookie, and that was game 7, right? So he was doing this first week. So it was impressive to see his growth during the season. And, you know, I truly believe that we have a hell of an offensive line. And, you know, even when we had people have to step up, you know, I truly believe our system is built for offensive linemen, which is why I'm blessed to be a part of it, right? You know, we have great running backs and we have a quarterback who, you know, I think Baker by the end of the year was getting it out in 2 and 2.5 seconds. And, you know, that's one, keeping him clean, and two, making my job so much easier, right? So we were starting to hit on all cylinders, and it was awesome.
So the offensive lines are known to be the closest knit group on NFL teams. Did that hold true with you guys?
Yeah, so this was a weird year, right? So normally we'd be having cookouts every week. We'd be going to dinner every week. We'd be spending time. You know, I'd be hanging out at someone's house. They'd be hanging out at mine, you know, but we couldn't do that. So you couldn't even hang out with one player. You know, so even in the beginning of the year, you know, when the regulations were even a little bit, you know, because they actually got stricter for us as we went on. So it was like in the beginning of the year, you could kind of see each other at football. You could kind of see each other. And then it was like by the end of the year, I think we were coming in the facility once a week. I mean, it, trying to take care of your body, trying to recover. I'm not making excuses, but it's tough, man. It definitely is a job. It's an all-time job. And if you don't have the time putting into it, it definitely shows its nasty head, which is why there were so many injuries this year. I don't think it was abnormally, but some of the soft tissue injuries were a little bit abnormal. And, you know, you hate to see that, but, you know, it is what it is. You know, I think my high ankle sprain, I don't know what more I could have done to with stronger ankles. I mean, even Coach Callahan, like, said after that play, he was, you know, thankful to God that I didn't break my ankle because it was a pretty nasty hit. So it's just a weird year. And, you know, I definitely felt that. And 21 years of playing football, I've been injured twice and they were 4 weeks apart. So it was definitely a weird experience, but hopefully we can all hang out next year and go on dinners and actually spend some time together.
So that kind of raises the question, with the kind of minimal time you got to share together, who is the funniest guy on the offensive line group?
Well, I'd probably say, like, I'm probably class clown, but I don't know if I'm the funniest. I would say that I'm the one who's probably the goofiest, who's trying to make everybody laugh. But when it's time to go, we're all ready to go. But I would say that, you know,
definitely you.
It's JC actually, and Joel. I don't know. JC and Joel are absolutely hilarious. They are so witty, other, right? And they feed off each other. I mean, they're a great part of the room. Jack started doing it too. Jack started feeding off them too. But I mean, like I said, like by the time that, you know, we really started spending time together, we had to go virtual and go at home and everything was on Zoom. So we weren't even in the facility anymore. So, you know, all that personal stuff where, you know, last year when I got to actually spend time in the room, we had such a great room, you know, with Eric, with all these different guys. So it was a great, great experience, but, you know, it's definitly a weird year, but blessed to have, you know,
somebody
the moments
else
that
asked
we did.
You that. Who was the funniest on the team? Who do we say?
Oh, I mean, there's Higgy? So many funny guys. Yeah, Higgy is hilarious.
Yeah, he's
so, will we be seeing you and Carly on a progressive commercial with Emily?
I mean,
that's what I keep telling them.
They put Jed in there. I mean, come on, they gotta put me in there. But
I'm like, Em, put us in the commercial. We got engaged at your home.
Yes. So yeah, at your home
twice. They put him in there twice.
Yeah, exactly. So it was an absolute blessing. Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, I hope. Oh, my bad.
No, you're good. You're good.
I hope we can definitely see you guys in the commercial at some point. That would definitely make it all come together.
Sign us up.
You mentioned it earlier in the year. You were placed on the COVID reserve list the week before the Ravens game on Monday Night Football. But luckily, you were able to play in that game. What happened in that situation, and what was kind of the protocol?
Yeah. So, like I said, I was within an hour of within a minute of texting our medical staff that I pack a bag and get the heck out of there. So as soon as Carly got her test results back, she stayed in her car. And I got all my stuff out, got everything done, and moved out. I just remember Carly just being so distraught over it and so hurt. And I'm like,
so upset.
And just in crying because, like, she thinks she just hurt the Cleveland Browns, right? Like, think about it. She just went to travel to see family and friends. And
no, I went to the game. I went to the game in Tennessee, and it was my birthday weekend. Yeah. And we, you know, I got tested before I went to be careful, came back, tested positive. And I mean, honestly, it was amazing that Wyatt did.
And of course, we had to, you know, beat the Ravens. So she was like, oh my gosh, I let the whole city down. I'm so distraught. So she is hurting. And I'm like, baby, it's going to be okay. You know, we FaceTime five times a day. You know, we were staying in contact, but it was definitely weird being, you know, I was in the hotel off Bagley.
Into the facility.
Yeah. So like,
right, for a couple days.
And I couldn't go into the, yeah, I just so tested. Like, so the only time I got to leave my hotel room was to test. And then I'd come home and, you know, study football and, you know, play video games and FaceTime Carly and watch TV. And it got really repetitive, really old, really fast. As anybody who has had to quarantine knows.
The good thing about when Wyatt was on the COVID reserve list was that somehow with the timing of my positive test and that Monday night football game were exactly
five days.
And literally the day that he was allowed to come out of quarantine for being a close contact was the Sunday before the Monday. And I was like, well, thank God, at least that, because I mean, like, if you remember what happened with the receivers, that one game was it the They were in the same boat. They were close contacts, but none of them tested positive. They were kind of like,
What upset me is if they just, I want you guys to know this, and it just shows you how if you just follow the rules, right? Like I said this, like, yeah, did you worry about COVID? Not really, but it's still following the rules. If those guys had just worn their face shields, they were all wearing masks. Mm-hmm. Every single one of them were wearing masks. But if they had just worn their plastic face shields, they would have all been able to play.
Interesting.
So wow. It just shows you, just follow the rules, get this thing over with, and move on.
If I followed the rules, it would be.
I know, and it's so funny how all my friends, everybody in the offensive line room, would put money that I was the guy who was going to get COVID, and I didn't get it. JC was the only one who wasn't put on the list.
Oh, wow.
Everyone else was put on the list.
At least on the list. Didn't happen, but yeah.
So JC was really but JC is also the president. I'm pretty sure he lives in a small bubble that he blows up every day, getting from his house to football to the house. So he was super safe. He was also having a baby during the season. Anna and him had Addison,
baby girl.
And she's awesome. So so they were doing that. They were super safe, but yeah, Joel was super safe and somehow didn't make sense.
Crazy.
Yeah, it was definitely weird.
So you had two pretty severe injuries last year. First, you had the calf strain that you suffered week 5 against the Colts, I think it was. Can you take us through that play and like what your original thought was when you went down?
Yeah, so first let me preface. I was absolutely blessed there. I mean, look at Dak Prescott. I mean, there was a lot of guys who weren't so lucky. So I'm blessed to have just the calf. And yes, it was 4 weeks and I pray that never happens again, but I was blessed to have such a quick injury. And especially with the high ankle sprain, I think I was out 2 weeks. So I was definitely lucky in a lot of ways. But yeah, so that play was definitely weird. I remember it was a, sort. I think we were sorting left or sorting right or something like that. And I was blocking DeForest Buckner, and he was, he has these real long arms and he was feeling himself out and he was kind of pushing on my center chest. So I trapped him, slapped his hand down and he fell into the ground. And as I was like, as he fell down, he kind of like went between my legs. So I kind of like pushed back in like a weird motion, I guess. My entire life is spent pushing backwards. Yet this weird time I pushed back and, something felt weird in my calf. It felt like kind of like a cramp was starting, but then it just wasn't getting better. You know how like, when you first get a cramp, it's that tight and then it kind of like relaxes. Yeah. So it was like that shot, like someone just stabbed me in the back of the calf. And I was like, oh, what the heck? And it didn't get better. And I was like, all right, this is weird. So I end up playing 3 more plays on it. I think I, 2 more pass pros and I was hobbling off the field. I didn't even hobble off the field. I remember I looked at JC and I was like, JC, my calf's done, dude. And he was like, lay down. So I was like, all right. So I laid down. They came out and got me. I walked off the field. It was all okay. I think I did. I think that was in the first quarter, like third drive or second drive or something like that. And I ended up playing special teams on field goal the entire first half before being taken out of the second half. And, being taken out for, I think I missed 3 games and or 2 games and two games and a bye week. So then I came back after the bye week and I was able with the calf and I was able to play a little bit, definitely get back into normal, definitely weird. And then Ravens game, my ankle goes. What doesn't go. I mean, if you guys see the play, it's amazing that it didn't go even worse. Kareem was blocking his guy and I'm all for the pancake now. So I love the pancake. So I'm not mad at him, but he blocked his guy and, the guy tripped and went into my back, my legs. And again, I've seen really, really bad injuries that way. And a 2 week high ankle sprain, I'll count my blessings.
Yeah. That must've been so tough for you to watch your teammates after that, go out there and compete and you weren't able to be with them. But this is now for Carly. How nerve wracking is it to watch Wyatt play and put his body out there every week and risk injury like that?
So, I mean, it's nerve-wracking, but Wyatt, like, historically had never been hurt, which I don't know if that's bad luck to say that, but Wyatt had never had an injury. So, like, I mean, that's high school, college,
yeah.
NFL. And so I think I know how physically tough he is and how strong he is. So, like, I think
you're
after...
worried about them, not me.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't mean to sound like I don't get nervous. Now, of course, like if he goes down, I'm like, oh no, like, you know, I get really nervous and upset. But and I will say I was much more, I would get a little more nervous this year after he started having injuries.
Yeah.
But no, I mean,
it's more of a pride thing. It'd like, be the same thing as like watching your significant other do an amazing feat, right? You'd be like so proud, even if it is a little scary. You're like, this is what they do. This is they're a warrior, right? Like they're a gladiator. You gotta love.
And like this is like easy for me to say, like because I love to brag about Wyatt, but like he's honestly so tough. He would never. He's so humble. He wouldn't say this about himself. But like when Wyatt comes home for like, I'll go like lift one day with my girlfriends, and I'm like so sore and whiny. And Wyatt will literally go play in an NFL game, and you know, I mean, you know. Usually he's putting people on the ground, but you know, they get thrown all over the place and he comes home and doesn't say a word. And I'm just like, how? I mean, so he's tough as nails. And so, I mean, yeah, I get a little nervous, but I know his game and I know that he's the best, I think the best in the league. So, yeah.
I also had another question for you, Carly. When you are watching the games, you know, whether it's bad, on the TV, in person, whatever. Are you watching, you know, the team as a whole, or is it more like just kind of centered on Wyatt and watching how he plays?
That's a funny question because like before Wyatt and I were dating or engaged or anything before I watched football. I always watched Virginia Tech football. But I just watched the whole game. Right. I never would have dialed in on a right guard or anybody on the O-line.
Watch offensive line play.
Yeah, and I have. So now, of course, that's completely changed. And if I'm watching a game, especially, I really focus when I'm watching TV, you know, because I really just watch him. In person, it's obviously a little bit more like it's a lot going on.
There's an experience.
Right. But I've even had people reach out to me and say that, like, we support Wyatt and, you know, it's crazy. Like, I've never really paid that much attention to the guys on the line, but he's honestly really fun to watch. That's what I mean. I love because, of course, I'm biased, but he's so the way that he plays, it's so effortless. It looks effortless. He's fun to watch, like the way he does his little somersaults and stuff.
When I lose balance and somehow tuck my chin and keep it trucking.
So I definitely focus in on him for sure.
So what was the Week 17 game like when you guys found out you were going to the playoffs for the first time since 2002?
I mean, it was unreal. I mean,
we wanted to celebrate, but we didn't.
Yeah,
we didn't.
That's the weirdest thing is like the city was about to burn down and there's a 10 p.m. mandate. You know what I mean? Like it was definitely crazy. You know, I was it was just such a beautiful feeling because I know I've only been a Cleveland Browns fan for 2 years, but I know loss. I know a team that has a losing, you know, or not a losing culture anymore, but for so many years had a losing culture, and it's not, I mean, it is what it is, man. You can't control some things. Like I was a Redskins fan, right? So I knew loss again.
And he's allowed to say Redskins because they were Redskins when
Washington football team, sorry.
That's why he said that, because when he was a fan, right?
Yes. I'm sorry. PC, I was a Washington football team back when they called themselves the Redskins. So, yeah, it was definitely an amazing, amazing experience to not only beat the Steelers to go to the playoffs, right? That means the world.
That playoff game.
But we had to win that game. We had to win that game. And then when we get to go to the playoff game and they start, you know, peeing down their legs and we take advantage of it, it was an absolute blessing. You know, we're rivals, so we can talk like that. But, you know, they were a good team. It sucks when you have so much success and then injury hurts. And we saw a little bit of that, with me being injured, with our receivers being out for the Jets game. I mean, we couldn't really do anything on offense and it hurt. So, they had some key injuries that kind of held them back. But, I was happy that not only did we win our first playoff game in 20 years, but we beat the Steelers to do it. And Joel was on the COVID list, and I'm like, Joel, if anyone in the world deserves, he was on the 0-16 team. He was on the 1-15 team. You know what I mean? Like he deserves success as much as anybody. any Browns fan because he's seen the worst of it, and you know he got his chance. I mean, yeah, we didn't succeed like we wish we would have against the Chiefs, but we did it. We won our first game, which is a blessing in itself.
And you won the game without your head coach. Your head coach.
Yeah, which is another crazy thing. What the
heck? It was
so I don't even know like how to form a question to ask you about the first playoff game in Pittsburgh. So just talk to me about the game really quick.
Yeah. So I mean it would give you goosebumps. I mean obviously there. Any fan. Yeah, I mean it was a blessing that they let two okay, so Pennsylvania has been very strict with their laws, just like New York and California and stuff. So there have been no fans all year. In January, they let, I think it was like 4,000 or 2,000 fans, and it was like two people from each of the players' families.
Two family members per player, which think about that, like with all Steelers and all Browns, it's really not that much. Like,
no.
It felt the emptiest of any stadium I've ever, yeah. I mean, literally Wyatt could like hear me. I don't know if you guys saw the video that I took of Wyatt, but like he could hear me yelling his name. Like yeah. It was crazy.
It was definitely a weird aspect to it, but again, I mean, you know, the environment was weird, right? But it was perfect for us, right? Like, I feel like in a different environment, they might have fed better, might have been ready. It didn't matter to us. We were ready to play. And that was what's so amazing about this team to begin with, was that we were ready to play. I mean, yeah, we had some, you know, slippery slopes in some games and, you know, it kind of hit fast. But the majority of the time, we were ready to play, and we played hard. So it was a testament to who we had on the team and who was coaching us. But yeah, it was definitely a weird aspect, and it was an amazing feeling. It was so weird. They start snapping the ball over people's heads. They start throwing interceptions. They start. I mean, like I said, I mean, all jokes aside, you know, they start losing their minds, and we just stuck to it. I mean, luckily,
like that first quarter, I was sitting with Emily Mayfield, and I was like. She normally is like up in a suite, like up in a box. And so I was excited because we got to sit together that game. And I was like, we were just freaking out. I was like, Emily, what's even going on? Like, I don't even.
We set a record.
Yeah, it was.
Playoff record.
Yeah.
So an absolute blessing, right? I mean, to do it. And I know that, like I said, I've been a Browns fan for 2 years, right? So it meant the world to me, but it meant, and I know this, right? It meant the world to our fans. It meant the world to you guys, to the culture that deserves success so much. It meant the world to me to be a part to harbor that. So, because I couldn't imagine, you know, being a youngster or being, you know, a kid who grew up with burgundy and gold and never see a success, Redskins, never see success and wish to, you know, I could meet a football player, say, you know, thank you for taking us to the playoffs, right? Or something. So it's just, it's an absolute blessing. Again, it's only just begun, and that's the best part, right? Yeah. That's what we get so excited about is, you know, we can go do it. So it's right around. We our success. It doesn't matter what we did last year. It's all about this year. So, and even Coach is already talking about that. So it's good to hear.
I mean, you know, the Browns will be the Browns, so whatever. Yeah, exactly. But looking more into the future, talk to me about Baker and his leadership and how he has grown.
Yeah, so Baker – so when I first got here, so my first meeting of Baker was at the Senior Bowl, and, you know, we got along. So, we just shot the crap and stuff. My quarterback in college was actually – they went to the same high school, and Michael was 2 years older. So Michael Brewer actually started over over him. So I like to make that joke to, to Bake. But – yeah, Baker has been he's been a good friend, a good guy, and a great leader. He comes to work every day. As you saw throughout the year, you know, you could see a passion light, and he was just fire, man. He was the best I've seen in a long time. Getting the ball out and moving the pocket, and you know, making checks and being locked in. I mean, he was there, man, and it shows you that he can do it at a high level and do it often. So it shows you what kind of guy he is, what kind of player he is, and what kind of leader he is. He'd be the guy who I remember there was a play, I think it was the Tennessee game, and I was holding onto a guy's neck pad to just get in his head, and I remember he tried to break my arm or whatever. And I got a 15-yard penalty, and I remember Baker running from the top rope just through the back, like, get away from my offensive line. Like, yeah, babe. You know what I mean? Like, he's my guy.
Protective. So, and he respects you guys.
I think it was the same game I got stepped on and he ran over and was like pointing at the guy.
Titans game.
That's a good feeling when you're starting to get in guys' heads so much that they get their younger guy to step on your legs.
That was terrible. He got a suspension for that.
That guy didn't get to play the next game, right?
I mean, yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, all they do is hurt themselves because everything's filmed. So it's like, if you are getting so pissed that someone is in your grill and you can't stop it. No, but seriously, like, it truly is like face to face. Like,
you're like the opposite. Wyatt truly is a class act. He doesn't play dirty, I think, at all.
No, but I try to finish you because that's my job.
That's true.
Like, and it's the same thing. If I'm blocking you and you defeat my block and make the play, I don't punch you in the ribs. I don't fall on your legs and try to hurt you. I literally try to cover the block up, finish you down, help the running back out, and move to the next play.
Everyone
because that is our job.
Everyone should handle it like that little guy from the Chiefs.
Get my face, talk some smack, and move back and say, "Woo, he whooped my butt." But but no, I think that there's kind of a different experience sometimes on the field, but for the most part, it's pretty respectful, I will say.
That video, by the way, of you pancaking Tyrann Mathieu was awesome.
It's just so funny how he sees, and I was a bullet. I was like, I'm going to mess you up. So two series before that, we were just talking on the line, and he jaws to everyone. So if you give him the time of day, he'll come up to you and give you an earful of something he's got to say. So I'm sitting at the line, and I'm just like hands on hips, like, what's up, man? And he goes, what's up, big boy? What's up? saying all this stuff, and his mouth's moving 1,000 miles a minute, and he's like, you don't want this. I was like, I want to win, man. Like, what are you talking about? He's like, you don't want to win more than me. And I'm like, that's relative and honestly speculation, because you have no idea how I feel, and it's relative to you could be different in the third quarter that you are in the fourth quarter. So you're lying to me. And of course he didn't want to hear that. He was just yelling. I think I got three words out before he started yelling again. So I was like, all right, whatever. So I move back to the huddle, and I think the next series, I smoke him. So he was probably already laughing at what I had to say to what he had to say. And then, realize is real, and I got his butt. But he's a good player, and he's a hell of a guy.
Yeah, that was kind of a fantastic moment. So who was the toughest defensive lineman you had to go up against?
Believe it or not, and I truly mean this, I think that Chris Jones, he is one of those guys, and a lot of big guys who can move well at DeForest Buckner. There's a lot of guys who are moving towards the quarterback. They can you can punch them, you can staple their chest. It doesn't matter. They're lifting your hands up and they're turning a corner. I thought my worst game, honestly, I don't know if it was statistically, but just feeling wise, was that Chiefs game. I mean, I truly think that, I haven't got a holding penalty all year, and I got a stupid holding penalty on, I think, one of the best fillets I've ever done, where I was not holding at all. My arm was extremely straight. It was just a game where I was in a funk, and then once I started hitting my groove, there was three or four series in the second half where I started hitting my groove and really started moving, and we started scoring touchdowns, and we started getting into it, and, it just fizzled out. It sucks to say that, but I'd probably say that Chris Jones is one of those guys who's talented at what he does. He's a great craftsman. I can't attest to what kind of guy he is, but he plays hard sometimes, and when he does, he's pretty hard to block.
So really, just briefly, how can you characterize your time in Cleveland?
I mean, it's been amazing. It's been a what thought to be a heartbreak, right? I know that sounds crazy, but when you get drafted to a team, you give all your trust to that team, right? They gave you your chance. And then you realize that that's not how the NFL works. It's so much of a business. It can still be personal. You can still be friends after it. You never burn a bridge. Like I said, Coach McDermott, I respect him. He's one of those guys who a month after I got traded, he was texting me, Wyatt, man, thinking about you, wishing you the best. He's a godly guy. So he, gave me a Bible verse, and, that's what kind of guy he is. So it was definitely a weird feeling when I first got here, but I started to realize that this is everything I needed. I needed to get away. I needed a new start. I needed a new opportunity. I've been put around an amazing group of men in coaches and in players. You know, even last year I didn't have Jack, but this year I do, and next year I do. And you know,
love the city. And, I mean, the people are.
And the fans are amazing. The fans are amazing. You know, I asked Carly to marry me in the stadium. You know what I mean? Like it shows you how much, you know, the city means to me, because it's, you know, where I got, you know, my first little taste of success, and I pray to continue to have success for the rest of my career. But, you know, it was definitely a, you know, humbling moment into a, this is what was planned, right? This is what was supposed to happen. This is such a powerful divine moment, you know? So it was definitely a weird, but beautiful thing.
So that opens up the question, what does the future hold? Do you see yourself staying here long term? Has there been contract extension talks? How are you kind of feeling about that?
Yeah, so I mean, I pray to stay here, man. I don't want to leave. I don't want to leave Cleveland. I love the blue collar. I'm just far enough away from home where I don't feel tempted to go home every weekend. But we can drive. My family can come see me. I love Ohio as a state. I know it sounds weird, but I love Ohio as a state. I love the lake. I love
he
the snow.
He can have his guns.
Have my guns. I'm proud to be in Ohio. But yeah, it's definitely the best is yet to come, and that's the most promising, right? Like, we had just started. We had just started learning the offense, and you saw how it took off. O left in game six. Imagine having O for 17 games next year. Odell he's a game changer. I know that some people think he's more problems than he's not. I promise you, O has gotten the short stick with the media his entire life. I mean, he just doesn't respect him. So I think that sometimes, you know, if they got a shot, they'll take a shot. And, you know, that only hurts him. So
he'll be back.
He'll be strong, and he'll be, I mean, it's, oh, he's going to be fast and smart and great hands. But yeah, for me, I pray, like I said, I want to be here. I have one more year on my contract, and I pray to make the most money. Right. I know you guys understand that too. But if it's making sense, I'm staying, you know what I mean? Like, there's no question about that. And like I said, I love the organization. I love the coaches. It definitely is a different culture we're growing, and I love to be a part of it.
Well, thank you guys so much for taking the time to join us today. Congrats on your guys' engagement. And we obviously all hope to see you in Cleveland for a long time.
Yes, appreciate you guys. Thank you, Noah.
Yeah, thank you.